call of the shofar calls us into the presence of the Almighty God, the King of the universe. And after all, have you not heard what He has to say? Have you not heard His voice calling you into His presence? Well, that's what we're going to pursue. My friends, thank you for joining us today as we pursue the face of the Lord.
Welcome back, my friends. We're here again today with Pastor Bruce, and we've been talking about the Ten Commandments and how it really affects our lives. What do they mean to us today? We briefly covered honoring God, should not have any idols, and we went over a little bit on how the Word says to honor your father and your mother. And it was very interesting to hear that it doesn't say you have to love them. But we know that there's some people that are from a very hard-pressed family, and some of them are very dysfunctional. But you still need to honor your parents. And with that, we need to look at the next commandment, which is, you shall not murder. Now, a lot of people take that as you shall not kill, but that's not what the Word says. And the fact that you shall not murder really carries a lot more in it. And it's a lot more, it makes a lot more sense when you look at it. Pastor Bruce, could you lead us on that a little bit?
All right, Doug. Do not commit murder. It's Exodus 20, verse 13. It's the sixth commandment. And as we're relating this to the family, we kind of think, well, murder seems like kind of a weird thing to relate to family. But it's interesting, but statistically, most murders that take place are within the context of family, friends, close associates, relatives, that kind of thing.
Oh, that's interesting.
So that's somewhat scary, really.
Yes, it is.
So murder, in the very most literal sense, is obviously something that we're commanded not to do.
Right.
And we need to stay clear of. But I think there's a more subtle murder that many of us may fall into that's just as dangerous and just as devastating, if you will, as committing an actual murder. And that is, the Lord tells us that we can kill people, we can murder people with our tongues.
Oh, yes.
And I think that that's an issue in our families, because in our families, when we're in the family setting, we tend to let our hair down, relax a little bit, or don't quite have the restraint on our tongue like maybe we do out in public. Or,
well, that's very true.
And so we can say things that honestly are very devastating.
Yeah, you can see how much damage it does to children and even, siblings. As you're talking, they say sticks and stones will break your bones, but words will never hurt you. That's far from the truth.
Yeah, that's false. That's we were brought up with that understanding, which is really a lie. It's a falsehood.
Yes.
Because words cut much deeper than knives.
Absolutely.
Really. And we can heal from a physical wounding. We don't always heal from an emotional healing.
Exactly.
It's interesting, you were commenting when we started on the fifth commandment, which is honor your father and your mother, and we're told to honor them, but we're never told you have to love them.
Right.
And it's interesting in light of this, because sometimes there's been so much damage done that love is basically out of the question, but you can still honor the position.
Correct.
And so when we become wounded, that wound may never heal. And then in the case of the fifth commandment, loving of the parents is kind of out of the question. And in this sixth commandment, you shall not commit murder, we're so wounded that we have been murdered. It affects the rest of our life. It can kill parts of your life.
Absolutely. And as a reaction to that, we often say things against the offending party, which does the same amount of damage.
Exactly. So I think it's very important that we understand this. We've got to get a grip on our tongues. We've got to think before we speak. And really, if we just do what the Word admonishes us to do, in Philippians chapter 4, it says, whatever's pure, whatever's right, whatever's lovely, whatever's godly, whatever's good, let your mind dwell on these things. And so if we, in our home, in the home front setting, if we take that to heart and we begin to build one another up with our words, then we'll be sure that we're not breaking the sixth commandment by murdering them with our words.
Absolutely.
So I think that's crucial that we understand that and we get a handle on that. And I would say rather than focusing on not saying negative things, I would tell our listeners, focus on speaking positive things.
Absolutely.
So if you're focused there, then that's what's going to come out of your mouth.
Right.
And it's a catch-22, because whatever comes out of our mouth is what's in our heart. But faith comes by hearing. So as you speak positive things, you hear those positive things, you begin to believe those positive things, and then that's where your heart goes.
Absolutely.
And then it starts
right.
flowing out of your mouth. Goodness starts flowing from your tongue more frequently than bitterness.
You're right. And it's interesting, too, in talking to some people in their life situation, I found out that it's not always necessarily a complete negative thing that's said to them that really hurts them. Person I have in mind, their father was a very strict person and says, you know, if you're not sick or die or bleeding, I don't want to hear about it. You know,
yeah.
don't say that you're hurt.
Yeah.
And
right.
just suck it up and get over it. Well, that affected their whole life.
Oh, yeah.
And even when they were hurt, they couldn't get the help for it. So now some of those injuries have
right.
increased.
Yeah, our words are so important, and we have to really speak only what's going to edify.
Absolutely.
Not what's going to tear down, but what's going to build up.
Absolutely.
And if we do that, we won't be killing people. We won't be murdering them.
Exactly.
So I think that's what we have to keep in mind with that sixth commandment when it comes to the issue of our immediate family. And then the next commandment in verse 14 of chapter 20 is do not commit adultery. And so, again, adultery is a sin that will really tear up a family, really destroy a family.
Oh, absolutely.
Quickly. And, of course, this is both in the physical and also in the emotional or mental areas or the spiritual areas. We are not to give ourselves to another person other than our spouse. Whether that be physical or emotional.
Right.
Because the emotional will lead ultimately to the physical. And adultery, when adultery has been committed, adultery is one of those sins that people sometimes cannot get over. So much damage is done, so much betrayal is done, that people just can't see their way to get over that hump. This is why the Lord said that Moshe allows you to have a certificate of divorce for the sake of adultery, because sometimes it's so wounding and so devastating that the person just cannot get over it.
Right.
And so, and consequently then, of course, the marriage splits, breaks apart, and consequently after that, the family breaks apart.
Right.
So this is a huge deal.
Oh, it is. And it's important, too, because when you realize that marriage, you're knitting two souls together.
Right.
And when you start tearing what God has made one back into two, it never comes out clean.
Well, you're right. And the operative word there is tear.
Yeah. Right.
Adultery is not a surgical procedure that cuts nice and clean and can be sewn back together.
Right.
adultery is a tearing and ripping apart, which typically leaves a, you know, if you have an arm cut off clean, you may be able to sew it back on.
Right.
If an arm is ripped off, it's very hard to salvage that. It can be done, but it's very difficult.
Right. Exactly.
Because the tear is just, it's not clean. And that's the case with adultery. It's never a clean split. It's never a clean parting of company. It's a very grievous wound. It's betrayal.
It is.
And betrayal is one of the very worst things that a human being can experience from another human being. And it's very difficult to get over it. And then, of course, the Lord came along and he said, you know, if you look at a member of the opposite sex with lust, then you've already committed adultery in your heart.
Right.
So what is that going to do to our family? That's going to start, it's a more subtle tearing down, more behind the scenes.
Right.
More covert. But nevertheless, it is whittling at the fabric of the family the entire time. And your entire lifestyle will change, your countenance, your the way you perceive things, your interaction with your family. In fact, when you know that you're guilty of something, what happens? You start distancing yourself.
Exactly.
It's just a human response. So if you're committing a mental adultery in your mind, you start distancing yourself from your spouse and subsequently from your children.
Right.
From your spiritual family, so on and so forth. So that, if that goes long enough and far enough, there's only one result.
Right.
You've split something apart that God had put together.
Wow. Yeah, that's true. Now, how does that tie in? Because when I was learning counseling and on all this, they said that a man has those thoughts every so many seconds. Constantly, and a woman does probably every so many minutes.
Yeah.
But how does that tie in? And how do you control or keep that from entering into a true sin?
Well, a thought is a temptation.
Right.
And a temptation is not sin. The Lord himself was tempted in like manner as you and I.
Right. That's what the word says.
So he was tempted in this with the same issues. Okay? The issue becomes, as James gives us that progression, James says as we begin to, a weakness in our thinking, a weakness in our moral fabric, we begin to dwell on that. And then what happens, the more we dwell on it, it eventually slides in and gives in to sin.
So basically, you'll go back to take every thought captive. And
exactly. And that's a moment-by-moment thing. Like you're
right.
Mentioning, men have thoughts in their prime, you know, every so many seconds.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And so what do? Well, you have to show self-restraint, obviously.
Right.
You've got to repent because you may have crossed the line and taken the thought too far. You need to ask the Lord to, what I do is 1 John 1:9. I confess.
Right, absolutely.
Confess. He's faithful to forgive, to wash and cleanse. Now, even if I haven't taken it too far, in the confession alone, the Lord will forgive, wash
right.
and cleanse. So I don't spend too much time worrying about whether I've taken it too far or not. Because who knows, you know, you can argue that point all day long.
Yes.
I just deal with it as if I've crossed the line and entertained something I shouldn't have entertained.
So better safe than sorry.
Better safe than sorry.
Right.
So I think that's just a lifestyle. I personally have developed a lifestyle of confession, and standing on 1 John 1:9.
Yes.
For me, that is a very definite choice that I've made. It's a lifestyle, and you know, if I have to fall back on that 70 times, 7 times a day, then that's what it is.
And God is faithful.
And God is faithful to his word every single time.
Right.
And then as you start to get self-control on that, you can start to catch that thought quicker.
Yes.
And the quicker you catch the thought, the less you migrate into sinful turf.
Exactly.
But I still want to go through the cleansing thing anyway.
Oh, absolutely.
See? So I think that that's very important, and it is something that we deal with. But one of the fruits of the Spirit is what? Self-control.
Yes, it is.
So when we let that go too far, the sin is not just adultery type of thoughts. The issue becomes we're not using self-control.
That's a good point.
So that really is the root of the sin.
Yes.
See what I'm saying?
Right.
So the adultery is kind of a symptomatic. The root more of the other.
Yeah.
I mean, if that makes sense.
Yes.
You know.
Yeah, it does.
So self-control is a huge issue. And self-control comes up in every area. I mean, it comes up in adultery. It comes up in murder, stealing.
Oh, absolutely.
Accusing someone falsely, coveting. All of those things can be traced back to a root of lack of self-control.
Yes, absolutely.
So self-control has got to be, a big issue in our life. It has to be one of our number one prayers. For myself, I know self-control has always been a big prayer for me.
Right.
Lord, I need more self-control because I realize the thoughts, the stealing, accusing people falsely, coveting, wanting to hurt somebody with your tongue, as long as you're in this flesh, that really doesn't go away.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, it gets better.
I've noticed, yes.
I can honestly say I'm in a better posture today than I was 30, 40 years ago.
Oh, absolutely.
But the flesh is the flesh.
Right.
And the flesh is in total enmity towards God, total hatred towards God.
Right.
So the flesh is always going to have that flavor to it. So self-control is a huge issue. You've got to get yourself under control.
Yes. Yeah. Now, I've noticed over the years, obviously, I've been through training and cleansing stream a lot of that. So it puts you through it on a very regimented basis. And I've noticed that even going through that, and as you repent and as you confess, and it gets the occurrences become less and less.
Well, as you expose something to the light, it loses. Darkness loses its power when exposed to the light.
Right.
So, really all darkness is the absence of light.
Yes.
See?
That's true.
So you bring the light in and the darkness
has to flee.
Dissipates. It's gone. There's shadows. I mean, in this room right now, there's lots of shadows around.
Right.
And that's a form of darkness, but it's a very watered down form.
Yes.
I mean, sitting here in this office late at night, sometimes when I get ready to leave, I shut off all the lights. It's pitch black in here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I'm sure.
There's no shadows. It's all black.
At that point, yes.
But when we have the light on, there's just the shadows. And that's kind of like our life. When you're walking strong in the Lord and you're letting that light shine and radiate, then, yes, you have some shadows. I'm not sure this side of heaven will ever be free of shadow. But a shadow is a whole lot different than pitch black darkness.
Right.
If you know what I mean.
Yes, absolutely.
And if we look at our lives that way, it's a good illustration for us.
It is. And, you know, I think that's an extremely good point, because what you're pointing out is that we shouldn't condemn ourselves just because we have a passing thought, as long as we're taking control over it and trying to exhibit self-control.
Well, you're in good company.
Yes.
If you have a passing thought. And like I said, a passing thought is not sin.
Right.
A passing thought is a temptation.
Yes.
Or can be a temptation.
Right.
Because the Lord was tempted in like manner, we know that temptation is not sin because he was sinless.
Correct.
So just to have that thought come and go, that's just life.
Yes, it is. And I think that's one thing that I think in my early days in the church, I was taught wrong. Because it was very, very strict. You've got to do this. If you even think wrong, you're condemned. And it really came down kind of hard.
Well, it does, because ultimately, that's obviously the target we're shooting for.
That is the target, right.
But, like I said, I don't suspect we're ever going to make it there.
Right.
Quite honestly. I mean, I know anything's possible to the Lord. I understand that.
Yes.
But I've never met anybody that's made it. You know what I mean?
That's true.
That doesn't mean there's not somebody out there somewhere. But I'm of the persuasion that really only the Lord is the only sinless one.
Right.
I think the rest of us cave into it and we're weak. The spirit is willing, but what? The flesh is weak.
Right, absolutely.
It's not controlled. And so we fall into these things. Even Paul had the same problem. Why do I do the things? I hate the things that I'm doing because I don't want to do them.
Right.
And the things that I don't want to do, I end up doing. And the things that I want to do, I end up not doing.
Exactly.
And that's kind of the dilemma of Romans 7 and 8. And I've heard teachers teach that, well, Paul had the problem in chapter 7 of Romans, but in chapter 8 he got the victory. Ah, that's not what it teaches. That's not what it's teaching.
It says it's an ongoing battle.
It's an ongoing battle. And it's interesting to note that, Paul never made amends with Mark until the end of his life. So there was a huge looming cloud in his life.
Wow. Yeah. That's so, something I think a lot of people don't realize.
He made it right. Mark came in and they reconciled, but only at the end of Paul. Paul was waiting to be executed when that happened.
Yes.
So there was a cloud hanging over him in that respect.
Wow.
Not to put him down, but we've got to teach the Bible the way it's written.
Right.
If we get too spiritual with it, and I hate to even say that because somebody's going to misunderstand what I'm saying.
Right.
But if we over-spiritualize it, we set a bar that's so high that we tend to give up before we reach it, because we realize, well, maybe you can reach it, but I know I can't.
I've seen that on a lot of people in the church, and it turns them away. It starts really getting discouraging.
Well, hope deferred is what makes the heart sick.
Right, exactly.
So you come to the Lord and you think, okay, my sins have been forgiven. Now I'm going to be able to get rid of all of them. And that's what we want to do.
But
and then
can't.
It doesn't happen.
Exactly. Exactly.
So that's problematic.
It really is.
So I think the church has really done the teachers have done a disservice the way we've taught young believers. We're teaching them the hypothetical, really, that you don't have to sin in Messiah. I believe that. But that's a lifelong struggle.
Yes, it is.
And that's the part that's usually left out of the message.
That's true. And, my friends, I am sorry, but that's all the time we have for today. But if you want to get back with us, please do next time. And if you have any comments, please let us know. You can reach us at www.shilohmessianic.com. And we're glad to hear from you. So until next time, shalom.
My friends, thank you for joining us today as we look to the Father's Word to learn His ways and to draw closer to Him. I pray that there be shalom in your life, nothing broken and nothing missing as you pursue a closer walk with the Father. Let Him touch your lives and guide you as you go through this week. Now please join us next time as we explore more of Haven't You Heard?
Shalom.